G'day, mate, how you going? This here is The Mullet, and of course it is Lethal Mullet Podcast on the Lethal Mullet Network, episode number 203 in the second season of the podcast here. Of course, also courtesy of Fandom Podcast Network, I'm your host Adam O'Brien, and tonight we're going to be chatting about your favourite new live-action Star Wars show, that is of course Cassian Andor. Yes, as Stellan Skarsgård likes to remind us, it's the man himself, Andor, that we're going to be chatting about. Andor. Yes, Andor. And we're going to be also talking about Star Wars timelines and much more in the Star Wars universe and in and around, even maybe some Lord of the Rings. Who knows where this talk will go. And of course, it is with the man himself, the great, the awesome Nathan Patrick Butler, who is a master of all of those, all here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast. Let's get into it.
Action. Now, where's the mullet? Where is he? Is he coming in by chopper again?
And now, live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, it's time again for your dose of action cinema history from the 80s, 90s, and beyond with the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Oh, g'day, man. How you going?
Hey, how you doing? Welcome to the Lethal Mullet here, of course, on Quinlan's Cantina, Gold Coast of Australia. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, the Lethal Mullet, and joining us today, all the way from the United States, is a dear pal of the show, dear pal of course, the Star Wars community, and one man who is, I tell you what, onto it when it comes to anything in terms of timelines. This man is a genius when it comes to that and continuity. The one, the only, Nathan Patrick Butler. Mate, how are you?
Hey, I am good. I am good. Although, you know, you're talking me up now. Now I've got to remember stuff, you know? It's like, that's what the timeline was for, stuff, you know, I wrote it down so I wouldn't have to remember, and all that kind of stuff, right?
Oh, 100%. But, I mean, the thing is, I love anything when it comes to histories and stuff like that, not just in this universe, but others. And what I do enjoy about doing that is just to get a lay of the land of where things have happened and vice versa in history. I think any franchise, whether it be Star Wars, Lord of the Rings, whatever, it's an interesting part of it.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like it's one of those things where, you know, I'm a social studies teacher, so I'm definitely biased on this issue. But I kind of feel like, you know, with anything in modern day, it helps to know the historical roots of things to be able to understand what it is that we're seeing happening around us and, you know, the cautionary tales from the past versus what's happening now and all that kind of stuff. And I feel like that is something that we need to see also within the franchises that we love, right? So Star Wars or otherwise. I will say that for Star Wars, it's been an interesting thing, because when Star Wars storytelling happens, it's in the moment, right? So the High Republic 100%. Is way before the current stuff, and yet you're reading it as stories being told kind of at that moment, right? It's there in the moment. It's not someone looking back from, you know, a present around the original trilogy or something saying, this is what happened so long ago. You get a chance to kind of see it. So it's almost like reading fictional history, particularly with something like Star Wars, as opposed to like the Silmarillion or something for Lord of the Rings, it really feels less like reading history and more like almost like watching the documentary footage, like the found footage or something from whenever it was that an event happened, if we were comparing it to real life. So definitely, it definitely was a passion of mine for a very long time. Now I tend to lean towards the history of the home video side of things with that passion at this point. But yeah, that's always been my thing. I've always liked looking back. I don't feel like you have the context to really enjoy today without knowing what happened before and how lucky we are in most kinds.
I agree. You know, it's an interesting part too, now that you're looking at the home video market too. There's so many different releases, you know, not just in your neck of the woods, but I mean, globally, it's interesting to see it.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where, you know, what's fascinating, what drove me to do from the Star Wars Home Video Library on YouTube and to do A Saga on Home Video, the books stuff, which I keep handy all the time, again, so I didn't have to remember, is that you see those different patterns throughout different markets in different regions. For example, you know, it's the 45th anniversary of A New Hope being in theaters this year. And what did they do to celebrate on home video in the United States? Absolutely nothing. Nada. Zip. Zero. Didn't touch it at all. There were some trilogy sets, though, released in other regions. Like in your neck of the woods, you guys got a really kind of interesting set of, what, 9 releases, I guess it was, where you got a DVD set, a Blu-ray set, and a 4K set for each of the 3 trilogies separately, and yet each one was only the film discs. We've never really seen that in the U.S. We've never seen in the U.S. a 4K release, for instance, of Star Wars films that was just 4K, that didn't pack in the Blu-ray or pack in a digital copy or something. And it's a nice little streamlined, nice on the shelves kind of package. But then you see other patterns in places like France, where they had a 4K Blu-ray, et cetera, set. In the UK, they had what France had, but not the highest end stuff. It's just interesting to see that. I haven't had a chance a little bit to delve into some Australian releases, particularly some of the ones that just sort of stood out that made for nice sidebars when I was doing a Saga on Home video. Like, I love you guys' original DVD releases of the prequels, because you got those easy DVD limited edition fancy schmancy versions that we just didn't get. Ours was just kind of a, you know, here's a release, now here's a bunch of extra stuff to cause it to be an exclusive. Want a coin? I don't need a coin. Here, have a coin. You know, okay. Thanks, Target. I appreciate it. Would have been nice to have a special cover or something, but I'll take the coin. Fine. You know, that kind of thing.
It's great because, I mean, it's interesting, even for us, looking overseas for different releases, you know, and it's not just in Star Wars. Australia's got a very, let's say, just very strange distribution history when it comes to material, particularly on DVDs. When that DVDs came out, one of the companies, to put a real prime example, is Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers always put out massive special editions in the US, UK, the Asian market as well. And then we got a one disc thing, and the special features were interactive menus and trailers and languages. And we're like, okay. And then we do the hit, you know, you do the history on Amazon or wherever it is to find out what were other nations getting. And they were getting three disc editions with, you know, director's cuts. And so it's interesting, not just that company, but others. The only ones we ever got good editions of out here was, of course, our own science fiction brand out here. Of course, our own George Miller, Mad Max. So Mad Max, we've got, you know, gazillion editions of that were bang on the buck, perfect. And I think that's the difference. Again, those editions were then not available in other necks of the woods as well.
Yeah, and I gotta say, you know, you could say that you guys were just ahead of the curve, right? Because you look at 4K discs, almost no bonus features. So there you go. You guys are like, we're gonna do the stuff with no bonus features, because who really cares about that? Which, you know, which the fans all cry out, we do, and nobody cares. Basically, it's a Jurassic Park meme, right? We want bonus features. See, nobody cares. Yeah, that seems to be the way of it these days. But then again, you know, for at this point, getting physical releases at all is a pretty important thing, right? Keeping that physical media alive. And you see different places, like, for instance, you know, one of the things that I love, but I don't get a chance to watch as much as I would like, is 3D versions of the Star Wars films. You know, we know they exist for the prequels, but never got released on home media. But all the ones from Disney, all five of them have, but not necessarily over here. So for a while there, you could get them here. And then you had to import them, and most were importing them from, say, the UK. And then not even there anymore, because Disney kind of given up on that market. So now a lot of folks are importing, like the Marvel stuff, for instance, importing from Japan to get them over here. And just seeing as how, you know, we're lucky, I guess, to have physical media at all. But you can still see pockets around the world where media that's dead in one region is available in another, like beta cassettes. You could buy 1995 THX remastered edition copies of the Star Wars films on beta in Mexico, but in the US, the format had died for Star Wars almost a decade earlier. It just kind of depends on where you're looking. But that's what makes it fascinating to look at it from an international standpoint. I mean, my bailiwick is the US stuff, where I have mostly a complete collection, pretty close. But, you know, looking at all the international stuff, there's so many things out there, so many interesting deviations, even if they're teeny tiny. Like my first set that I ever owned was the box set from Fox Video from 1992, the little brick that had the three full screen cassettes. And I had the widescreen at the same time, but the brick had the three full screen cassettes. And Australia got one that looks almost exactly like it, but it's bigger. And you're like, what? Because you guys got, you guys lucked out. You guys had the clamshell cases for the VHS that are so much nicer. They protect them so much better than these flimsy little cardboard ones that we had over here. Now, so just little things like that I find fascinating. I'm sure others would be like, nerd, but I find it fascinating.
I do too. And it's one of the areas that I do, particularly for this channel, with you know, the main thrust of Lethal Mullet is action films. All those cheesy B grades right through to, well, some A grades. We want to keep that, you know, that the energy alive. And, of course, a lot of that is tracking down the old VHS clamshells of Jeff Winkart, Jean-Claude Van Damme, Schwarzenegger, all that sort of stuff. Because even then, the artwork was a thing to itself back in those days, whether it's the front or the back of the cassettes. They really went to town. And, you know, they got some great artists to work on these movies, which were the art was better than the movie half the time.
Yeah, and it depends, I guess, on what films you're talking about. But yeah, there were some that just, you know, like I can remember the cheesy action films that a friend of mine in high school used to watch. We used to hang out. He had the whole top floor of his house basically as his room, so to speak. So, you know, all kinds of little areas, and there were multiple TV setups so that we could watch, you know, the films of Lorenzo Lamas and stuff like that, yeah. The Renegade and all that, the television series. But yeah, it's definitely an underappreciated genre in some cases. Like Jean-Claude Van Damme, I mean, I will watch Time Cop pretty much anytime you sit it in front of me. In fact, my first online handle ever when I joined AOL way back in the day, America Online back in the day, mm-hmm. was Jack the Ripper, JKTHRPPR, because in the TV series spinoff of Time Cop, Ian Pascoe, the villain, had replaced Jack the Ripper in the first episode. And I was so fascinated mm-hmm. by that. And the first person I ever met online that was like famous was Mark Verheiden, who was behind that series. I mean, that's definitely, it's one of those things you don't see as much anymore. You don't see like straight action films as much anymore. You see spectacle films, but I would argue that's a different thing, right? Like that it's that a spectacle film, like say Ambulance recently, which I haven't seen yet. I want to see it. I got it marked to see it. Felt like it was supposed to be more of a spectacle film than it was a straight action film. It wasn't about the camera angles or even the prowess of the actors being able to handle the fisticuffs or anything like that, or the martial arts move, depending on which film it is. It was more just explosions. No, explosions. And I guess to some degree, Star Wars is somewhat responsible for that, right? That that Star Wars as a genre, whether it's original, you know, digital composition stuff or nonlinear editing with Edit Droid, or the volume now with Mandalorian and so on, has kind of pushed technology to the point where you can pretty much do whatever you want. But that means that when it comes to fight scenes, you don't really need to actually do it. You know, we can digitally make it look like you did something cool. You don't actually need the skill to do it anymore. Like, you know, we could do a Daredevil hallway fight scene. We'll just do it in post, you know, as opposed to actually train them to do it. So it's definitely a disappearing genre from the perspective of someone who watched it like in the 80s and early 90s. Mm. That style is fading, I think.
It is. And it's hard because, I mean, as you mentioned, like a lot of actors now, you know, a perfect example, Keanu Reeves. He actually, you know, as a martial arts instructor myself, I can say that he actually looks like he knows what he's doing. But your Stathams and all these others that learn it, and then, I mean, they go out and they do what looks good on the screen. At the end of the day, that's what it should be. At the end of the day, it's just if it looks good. But I could tell you from, you know, 90% of what I watched, none of it's real. You know, none of it would work, and it's certainly not in my dojo. But the great thing is that they're visual storytellers. George was somebody that really, and even Steven Spielberg, I think, a big part of that. And that goes back even further, Spielberg being influenced by, you know, the works of Guy Hamilton and Terrence Young, you know, the James Bond franchise, which really was the Star Wars franchise of the 60s.
G'day, mate. How you going? Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Network, where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Mark Newbold, into a deep dive of Star Trek. You can also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music, where I'm joined by my dear pal, Darth Elvis, and where you can also find the Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe. All here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on your favourite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Fandom Podcast Network, FPN, on fbnet.podbean.com.
Don't forget to also follow us on socials. There's, of course, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at the handle at the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you out there and enjoy your action cinema.
I think that's where, I think just to go to what one of the topics I know you wanted to discuss on here, just to think back to Andor, that Andor kind of is that whole, I don't want to say it's an homage to the older way of filmmaking, because it's not that they're doing it to be nostalgic. They're doing it because it's what works best for the series, to not necessarily do as much digital, to do it more practical. It's almost like we've reached the point where we have, it's as though technology in filmmaking isn't as much a spectrum as an elastic band. We stretched so far, and now there is a snap backwards to say, okay, we know how far we can push it. Now let's go back to what works best for a particular film. I've said quite a bit recently in some of the Q&As that we've done on the YouTube channel that we're at the point now where special effects by itself and digital technology just won't carry a film anymore. Yeah, there was That's a time right. at which that would carry your film. Your story could be okay as long as it looked really good. But now the story really needs to carry it. I think that's where, you know, like, for instance, Andor is coming in and really doing a good job of capturing a story that can be gripping. And the technology almost fades into the background. Like, you know it's there, but you're sitting there wondering what's real versus what is CG. And the fact that it is so seamless means that we're back to storytelling again, I guess, is one way to put it.
I think so, too. I mean, this is, you know, a layman's Star Wars. I think a friend of mine was telling me the other day, we're talking about all the series, Mandalorian, that everyone loves Mandalorian for the most part. But it's very much a gunslinger, sort of, you know, I think a bit more one note, but it's an action series, you know, that is, it's built to be that way. This has layers to it. And I think this is what really brought me into it was the pace. Feels like The Empire Strikes Back and A New Hope, without a doubt. It's not action packed. And that's those two movies in particular. I mean, Gary Kurtz will always say that, you know, they're not action pictures. They were space opera. And that's what I think the change up to Return of the Jedi moves it towards what we're currently used to, I think, more of that the action edge, which is fine. I mean, I think what grips me more about this was the coldness in parts, the intrigue, but also the way that the scripts are written in this and the dialogue feeds off each other. It is in that media res feel that, it just was Star Wars.
Yeah, and I think that is what – so I'm on record and on the YouTube channel as saying that my favorite current Star Wars film, if I were to look at what I would rewatch and enjoy the most, is Rogue One at this point. And I think a lot of that comes down to the gray areas that it goes into, that it is sort of the gritty war drama to a degree. And what fascinated me, Cassian Andor is my favorite character from that film. And it comes down to that level of, you know, all these things I've done are for the rebellion. If the rebellion doesn't succeed, it's been for nothing. That I've gone to a dark place, but I've gone to a dark place for the greater good. So the greater good must survive. It's a very fascinating character, you know, doing the wrong thing for the right reasons, I guess is one way to put it. And to finally get a chance to see his background, like we knew a little, you know, I still want to know the background of the, I've been in this fight since I was 6 years old, because he sure looked older than six in the flashback. So I'm wondering if that's actually dating back to when the adults disappeared or were killed off or taken away or whatever it is, because that would make sense if he was that young and having to fend for himself in that sense because of something that was done to the planet or to the people. But just to be able to see that, you know, and see those gray areas. And we are in a time, particularly in American society, there's a lot of introspection going on. Well, it's a weird dichotomy of introspection and complete blinders right now, right? We are either navel gazing to the point where we're just trying to figure ourselves out as a society, or we are just going with whatever the party line is for whatever side you happen to be on ideologically and putting on blinders to any further discussion. It's one or the other. And a lot of the things that come up within Andor are some of the things that feel compelling because they do feel so real. Whether it is, you know, the coldness of the system, the banality of evil, right? The idea that, you know, evil can be calculating in bureaucracy. It's not all going to be Palpatine shooting force lightning at you or Vader with a lightsaber. Sometimes it's going to be someone sitting in a boardroom who decides your planet isn't worth it anymore. And just to see the ISB at work, to see how Cassian fits into all of this, the idea that he is, I mean, he's more Solo than Solo, right? Because now that we've got the Solo film, he is the guy who's got the good heart, but really was far away from wanting to do good and mostly in it for himself. And something's going to have to change him to that path way more than Han. Eventually, once we saw, you know, how he sort of was the good guy to begin with in Solo, A Star Wars Story. So yeah, to me, it's a compelling thing. And I'm someone that usually pacing gets me. Like, the reason why, you know, Empire Strikes Back isn't higher up on my ranking of Star Wars films, as it could be, or perhaps should be, is because of the pacing in the middle. Pacing always gets me. And yet this is a really slow burn. And I'm loving it. It's my favorite live-action Star Wars series right now. And I would not have expected, if you had told me it was going to be a slow-burn series, I would have been like, you mean like the first season of Rebels?
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy has many a thing to say about deep thought. And deep thought itself has many a thing to say about the guide. Who are going to give you a guide through the maelstrom and enormity of the guide itself. Hosted by two unexpected travelers, the Lethal Mullet, all the way from Quinlan's Cantina in the Milky Way, and of course, Dan the Man from Birmingham. All on the other side of the water, they have hitched a ride and come to Ursa Minor. Tell you all about the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which you can find whenever you find good podcasts.
That's right, folks. Check out the brand new show, Deep Thought Life, Douglas Adams and Everything, monthly on, of course, the Lethal Mullet Network at lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on the socials at The Lethal Mullet. You can also check it out on YouTube very soon on the Spacebook Network, hosted by the one and the only co-host here, Dan the Man from Birmingham, Dan Hadley. All here. And don't panic, we'll be back.
Okay, we got this. Now, I love Rebels as a whole, but that first season was designed as slow burn, and I remember being frustrated by it. And yet, somehow the human element of this is compelling. And that's not something special effects could ever give you. You know, it's down to these amazing performances, and it's down to a very realistic world. I say, speaking from the Atlanta area that's become the Hollywood of the South, where, you know, films are getting made here quite a bit, and we see, you know, you see the crews and you see the people out and you're like, oh, they're actually doing it in a location. I guess I've kind of grown to appreciate that reality to the filmmaking a bit, seeing that around here. I don't appreciate when they deviate traffic to film stuff, but otherwise, you know, it's great to have it down here.
Good to agree. You know, there's a grittiness to, you know, filming on location, and there's certain films that need it. I mean, the greatest film personally outside of Star Wars, and outside of Dune, obviously I'm a massive Dune fan. The listeners know that. And yes, I'm going to have to say it because I've just said the name of the movie. Denis Villeneuve's Dune is flat out one of my favorite films that I've watched. But Mad Max Fury Road's the other one. You can't do Mad Max without being on location. Can you imagine trying to do Mad Max in the volume? It's just not going to happen. Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry, George Miller will not put himself through that. You know, he has to go to where it is to do it. I mean, they did Fury Road in Namibia, I think it was called, in Africa, which was the perfect location for what they were doing. The current one, which is out next year, Furiosa, which obviously is the story of Imperator Furiosa. So it's going to be set, I think it's 20, 30 years before, whatever it is, Fury Road. No Max, guys. This is not Mad Max. This is a side movie. But anyway, prequel to Fury Road. But that was done in near Broken Hill, out towards Silverton in New South Wales here in Australia, which you can have that beautiful big red sand everywhere on screen. And it's very reminiscent of the second film. So the one that would have aired first in the United States, The Road Warrior. So you would have had that perfect red soil sort of look. But anyway, getting back to it, yeah, I love the grittiness of Andor. And it's why, for me, Rogue One is the single best feature film that they've done. There's something about everything. Saw Gerrera is, to me, the apprentice of Vader, more so than Ahsoka. He may not be a Jedi, but look what he's become. He is like Vader. He's so into what he's doing as a partisan rebel that he's lost parts of himself. He's more machine now than man, you know, and I love that whole thing with Borg Gullet, you know, lies, deceptions. There's a whole little mythology just there. It's amazing. And yeah, Cassian is without a doubt the most interesting aspect of this because he is more 007 than 007. He is an assassin. That is his job. And he has no compunctions about it. He's getting paid to kill people. And guess what he does? He kills people. That's right. That's what he does, folks. This film, Rogue One, is more Jedi than Jedi, I really think. You know, the whole thing about the Guardians on Jedhar, the statue that's fallen on the side of the Jedi, everything in this, it may not have Jedi in it, but it feels like a Jedi film with the heart and soul, the fact that you sacrifice yourself for others for the greater good. What better thing than Star Wars?
Exactly. And I think that is what gets me. It's that heroic sacrifice thing. It always hits me. It hits me for Rogue One. I would say with Saw Gerrera in particular, I find it interesting how many layers we're getting to him. You know, we've seen him, you know, we saw him in Clone Wars and he's back in Rogue One. Now here he is in Jedi Fallen Order. And oh, and now he's going to show up in Andor. And so I guess he showed up in Bad Batch and then Andor. And they really are providing this sort of through line for him to see his descent into the extremism that he becomes and his sort of myopic view to some degree that he becomes. That's the kind of thing. And I don't think you would have seen in previous Star Wars, you know, in Star Wars and Star Wars, it's almost like they talk about how generations have the Star Wars that they grew up with is what they latch on to. And that can be a very different experience depending on the generation. You've got sort of the original trilogy generation, you've got the prequel trilogy generation, the Clone Wars generation, the Disney era generation. But thinking to, you know, the generation I grew up in, I don't know that I would have expected to see a character simply be like, oh, we got to get out of here and you can't climb. Boom, I just shot you. You're my friend because you can't give me up if you're dead while I start to climb. Or, to have a leader of the Rebel Alliance, this idealistic organization, supposedly, basically say to one of his men about this whole mission to go find that scientist guy who could save the day. Yeah, he's too valuable to the Empire. If you find him, you kill him, period. That is not the kind of thing you would see. You would see that in like war dramas. You would see it in the real world. But to see it in Star Wars, it's just a different layer to it. You know, it's like Lucas creates sort of the fantasy universe and lets it sprawl. And then other writers come in and do their own takes. Like there was a spy take prior to, you know, Andor. We had Agent of the, was it called Agent of the Empire? The comics.
Agent of the Empire, yeah.
Where basically they were doing sort of an imperial version of a James Bond type of thing. And getting a chance to just see these different genres play out. But I think you mentioned earlier, you use that phrase layman Star Wars to some degree. I think Andor is one of those shows that you don't really need to know much about Star Wars. You can watch it and enjoy it for what it is. I almost wonder if you took out the opening, that god awful Disney Plus opening that they use for all the Star Wars shows that I just can't see. Helmet. Why is it that Marvel gets a good one and Star Trek gets a good one and Star Wars gets the lame one? But if you took that out and maybe removed the title card that said Andor and showed it to someone who had never seen Star Wars stuff before, would they figure out that it's Star Wars until we see Stormtroopers later? And in that case, seeing the Stormtroopers primarily and recognizing them because of pop culture. It's one of those things, it doesn't rely on a lot of backstory. You don't even have to see in Rogue One. It helps. Isn't Melshi one of the guys who was with them in Rogue One? He's one of the prisoners in there with him late in Andor. You don't have to know that. You don't have to know who K2SO is to know how scary those, you know, K-series droids are when, you know, one of them's grabbing him and holding him up against the wall. It's an interesting thing that Star Wars, and this, it's the antithesis of what I would usually like. I'm usually someone who would say, especially during the Legends era, I want a story to matter and I want a story to feel connected. And this one, it connects. We've got Mon Mothma. We've got Yular in there. Obviously we have Andor. But it's not as heavily connected as, say, that second season of Mandalorian where everything was connecting. And all these guest appearances were happening. And yet somehow this is the thing that is enthralling me. It's just a different good Star Wars. I don't want to say it's a better Star Wars. because it's just a different take than what we have typically seen with it. And hopefully this will do well enough, and the second season will do well enough, that they'll pursue more of this type of storytelling, where they realize that it can be about the depth of story and expanding that universe and giving it sort of a grittier feel without necessarily needing it to connect constantly, to have, you know, people showing up as guests. You know, Saw showing up made perfect sense. It wasn't just, hey guys, do you remember Saw? Remember? It's Saw. It just works right now.
It really does. I'm keen to see where it goes. And obviously they've got a second season on the way. But I tell you what, folks, we do have some news and we're going to head into that now. Star Wars has a new movie on the way. Hopefully it's not another one that's going to be put on the shelf. You know, it kind of feels like the next Star Wars movie will be called Star Wars Episode blah, blah, blah on the shelf, because that's where those movies are going currently. But Damon Lindelof of course, Lost fame, and, of course, sadly, Prometheus fame, yes, is the currently hot-tipped to be the one that's going to be putting a Star Wars movie post The Rise of Skywalker out there. So is this episode 10? Is that what we're getting here, Nathan?
Well, they made it sound like it's not going to be tied, assuming that the reports are true, right? They made it sound like it's not going to be tied really to the Skywalker saga, which I think is a good thing. I think we've got the Skywalker saga wrapped up in a nice little bow. We had it wrapped up in a nice little bow. Then the package got bigger and got wrapped up in a bow again. somehow the Skywalker saga returned. And it's all nice and wrapped up now. I feel like we need to move forward. And that is what has actually been shocking to me, looking at the books and comics. I am not as voraciously quickly reading them as I used to. When I was doing the Star Wars Timeline Gold for that 20, 21 years, I couldn't read anything else. I had no time. It was all Star Wars all the time. Not doing the timeline anymore, not doing podcasting anymore. Retired from Beyond the Films, I guess, what, 2 years ago now? It's freed me up to be able to read more stuff. I actually get to read all of The Wheel of Time. I never thought I would ever get through all of that. But I am still following along with stuff. I am still reading, just not as extremely quickly and with as much, you know, an attention to nitpicky details that drive me insane. and I've been waiting and waiting and waiting for a story to take us past Rise of Skywalker. And so far, they've only been willing to tread that ground in Lego stuff. And that's just bizarre to me. They're not really filling in a whole lot of the gaps in between the trilogies right now to give us more, or in between, in that year gap between Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker. They're really not filling in that either. It's like they're just so myopically focused on two things, or I guess not myopically, biopically focused on two things right now. They're focused on the original trilogy era primarily, and just filling that up constantly. And they're focused on the High Republic stuff. And, you know, and the shows are kind of treading their own ground. But then here's this fertile ground where we just saw the Skywalker saga end, a big change in the galaxy. There's got to be ramifications of the fall of the First Order and basically the fall or near fall of the Republic prior to that, with Hosnian Prime being destroyed. So now what? Now what happens? And it's like, well, now what happens is they go to Vader's castle, and now what happens is they go on a summer vacation. No, that's not what I want to see in that era. I want to see something that tells us where the galaxy really is going, not Lego campiness. And hopefully that's where this is going. That's all signs point to a galaxy post episode 9 that isn't necessarily episode 10. And if that winds up being the case, that's great, because the standalone films and the series that they've done have been great. You know, I very much enjoyed, for instance, Solo. And it was an outing that was very safe. They didn't take a lot of chances with that, but it was a fun romp and didn't need to be a numbered episode to make it work.
Oh, 100%. Look, I liken it to, you know, you got somebody like Palpatine coming back and whatever that entailed. And, you know, yes, I'm not a fan of Rise of Skywalker or any of the sequel trilogy, to be perfectly honest. You know, I think there's certain directions that went that closed off stories. I think as a whole, all of it was an interesting idea. But to get to the Rise of Skywalker and you have such a big thing come back, what's next? I think the only way to go is a little bit like Frank Herbert did in Dune. God Emperor of Dune, once the God Emperor dies, the scattering happens. And in the scattering, there's groups that come in to try and fill that power vacuum. And, of course, we have then, of course, the most of the Bene Gesserit, which were still flying high. And of course, they had their fallen sisters, if you like, going into another realm. And it was their battle between those two. And obviously, it went through Heretics and Chapter House. But I think something along those lines is going to be something that tries to, you know, bring in that. And I think we had tastes of that post Return of the Jedi in the books Aftermath and all that that were done. But I think it can be done better, and it can be done, in a different way. I'm sure Damon's done that many different stories with Lost. You know, I got lost watching Lost. You know, as good as it is, but he also, to me, somebody who had come in as a second writer and producer, I guess, on Prometheus. The concept that was enough with alien engineers, and I liked what they were doing already with that. And then he took John Spate's stuff and then obviously enhanced it and did what he did and made it more a layman's version of what we get of an alien engineer story. Not quite as interesting, but I think that's what his focus will be, is bringing in something new, something fresh, which, to be honest, I think Star Wars needs with the feature films.
Yeah, I mean, that was where, say what you want about the Legends continuity back mm-hmm. in the day. I started reading it in 92, collected, and that's basically what I spent most of the time with the Timeline Gold dealing with, because, you know, the reboot didn't happen until quite a while later. But that was a storytelling venue in which they were willing to take some chances, and even fairly early on say, you know what, we could tell some really interesting stories in this universe with the backdrop that's been created if we go to a different time period. Like Tales of the Jedi was actually fairly early, not the animated series, but the comic series that shares its name, that they took the name from. That series was fantastic. Then they jump, 100+ years in the future, and you get Legacy. What my son is named Cade, named after Cade Skywalker. And they really have done some great things with this idea that, you don't have to be as tied into this particular era. That set the stage for the universe. But in essence, Star Wars is both a saga and a setting, right? Mm-hmm. And as a setting, we can tell all these interesting new stories. And hopefully that's what we'll see. He does tend to lean towards the, and I think Hollywood right now kind of leans toward the accessibility thing. Let's not make it so heavily weighed down in continuity or weighed down in references that you have to do homework before you see the movie, such that maybe he gives us something set in a later time where that becomes backstory. Just like the prequel trilogy was before it was made, that was all just backstory of the original trilogy. We knew kind of a little about it, but it just set the stage for the new stories to be told. And here, maybe the sequel trilogy and everything that happened there will be the backstory that sets up just the state of the universe for some brand new story to be told. And hopefully that will be, hopefully that'll be what we see coming from him. Assuming that he doesn't make like a Wonder Woman 1984 and just everybody's like, nope, never mind. Sorry. Not that movie. let's put that on the shelf for a little while. We're not going to call it canceled. We're just going to call it indefinitely delayed.
Yes, there's a few of those on the shelf of currently, apparently. But I tell you one thing that I'm really looking forward to, and this is another bit of news, folks, because poster art's gone out for it, and that is, of course, the Willow series airs very soon on Disney Plus. It's one of the reasons I'm keeping my Disney Plus subscription on longer. I usually, to be honest, I watch the shows and then turn it off and then go and watch Netflix again or whatever it is. But Willow is one of my absolute loves. And I'm one of the few that absolutely loves Chris Claremont and George Lucas's trilogy, The Shadow War too. You know, I knew the cheesiness of the universe. I mean, I knew the humor. Also, the fact that it's, he tried to do Lord of the Rings, basically, in that. And but I love the fact the dialogue was not so Tolkien-esque. You know, it was very much... very Lucas. I mean, this is a very Star Wars story when you get down to, Mad Mardigan and friends. I can't wait to get back into this universe.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'm assuming that all the novels are gone, unfortunately. It's been a long time since I read them. I still have them on my shelf, though. I actually have a little section of my Star Wars home video library set aside for Willow stuff. I just haven't really ever featured it on my YouTube channel, but I've got like steel books and old laser discs and stuff like that over there. Mm-hmm. It's a fun film. It'll be fun to see it come back visually, as opposed to being just in print, because it's kind of been a sort of dormant little tiny franchise for such a long time. I would say that I wouldn't necessarily compare it as much to Lord of the Rings. Now that I have had a chance to read Wheel of Time, it feels like it was doing for films like trying to adapt Lord of the Rings and trying to make it something that worked in that feel and yet had more of a modern dialogue and could appeal to modern audiences in that sense, kind of like what Wheel of Time did with that in print, right? Where Wheel of Time doesn't feel Tolkien-esque, but it was supposed to be sort of a riff on it, sort of the great American version of what Tolkien had done, but it updated for a new generation and so on. It kind of feels like the same thing here. Like, I don't imagine any more than we would hear Tolkien-esque dialogue coming out of Willow. I also would not expect the same thing in Wheel of Time, and I would not expect either of them to spend two pages talking about types of grass. So that's good.
Love it. You know, I've got to say, with Willow, I watched the movie obviously as a kid and loved it. And, you know, it's been every couple of years I'll chuck it on. And I always looked after, you know, I want a story that's like that in book form or a Star Wars like story. And, you know, got into Lord of the Rings, read that, and actually currently rereading The Hobbit. So we'll get into Lord of the Rings afterwards. I do it once a year. If it's good enough for Christopher Lee, it's good enough for me. That's how I see it. But also, you know, I was like, there's got to be one in there. So when Terry Brooks did the Phantom Menace novelization, I'm like, oh, okay, he's got his own fantasy series. I've got to check this out. And it kept saying he's very Tolkien-esque, but he takes all the Hobbit stuff out, takes all the poetry out. I'm like, right, I'm in. I love that idea. That's great. Because to be honest, I did skip some of those chapters. And then I'm reading Sword of Shannara, and I'm like, whoa, this is like, this should be a movie. Like, this is awesome. Because it's literally our universe, 3,000 whatever years in the future. And then there, in that universe, you still have all those Mad Max themes that are very prevalent in our stories that we love out here in Australia. So it's post-apocalyptic Lord of the Rings. What's not to like? Of course, they did screw up the TV show. I mean, you know, as much as I like, you know, what they, the idea that they did do, the budget's just not there to really vitalize what could be an incredibly interesting story.
Yeah, I feel the same way with Wheel of Time. Wheel of Time is an amazing series. The television adaptation of it has changed quite a bit, and the budget just hasn't been there, which is infuriating almost, because it's Amazon. The same people putting out the fantastic, amazing, sprawling universe of Rings of Power are also doing Wheel of Time and not doing it nearly the justice that they're doing to, you know, their original series set in the Tolkien universe with a few, you know, continuity changes here and there. but again, I'm not doing timeline anymore. So continuity, I'm not supposed to pay attention. Like Tales of the Jedi, I'm supposed to be able to just say, hey, that was fun. Not sit there going, but the Ahsoka novel, son of a.
Oh, we've got to get to it. Here we go. We're going to hit it in the bar, folks. All right, we're in there. Tales of the Jedi. I've got to say my two cents. How can you not do Ulick Keldroma's story? Lucasfilm, what are you doing? Come on. It's the greatest bloody story ever. And Nomi Sunrider? I mean, you've got two of the most amazing stories out there. Master Arca and all those guys. I mean, come on. I mean, what do? We go back to the safeguards of Ahsoka. We go back to, I mean, and great characters, not putting anything by, but we've done them. We've done them to death on screen. There's more to Star Wars than just the current area. And I mean, yes, okay, even though the Tales of the Jedi was done, to death on Dark Horse comics, but they're damn bloody good stories, and I want to see them live action.
Yeah, they were my favorites. In fact, outside of Cade Skywalker, I would say my favorite Legends character was Ulick Keldroma. Right. That the arc that he goes through, not just the fall, but the redemption that goes with it, the redemption that ties into Nomi and her child. It was a fantastic series. And I think what got me about this one, they give us a little anthology about give us some Ahsoka episodes to give us, you know, some background on her. Screw up the Ahsoka novel a little bit more. And give us, you know, Dooku's backstory. That's cool. But don't use this name. Call it something else. You know, Tales of the Jedi. Well, in at least two of her episodes, Ahsoka's not a Jedi in these six episodes. She's left, or she's the baby at that point. She hasn't been found by Plo Koon yet. And what got me about it, I think, and I can accept it for what it is. I enjoy it for what it is. I just think the title is misused. And part of that was that, you know, we started to see Tales of the Jedi logos on stuff. It was like holiday stuff at Lucasfilm or something. We saw the logo starting to show up on stuff like what, weeks or months before they ever announced what it was. So there's all this speculation like, oh my God, they're finally going to be telling stories like Tales of the Jedi did, jumping back thousands of years in the past, giving us some ancient Jedi. That's going to be awesome. And then they finally announce it. And it's like, what? You know, like this is what you're doing with that title? And again, it's not bad stuff. It's just the title is like a misnomer for that. It's another in these instances with Star Wars, and they've reused titles before, where you know you sit back and say, if I have to be telling you about a show or telling you about a story, and I need to add the not to be confused with the X of the same name, then you've named it wrong. You know, come up with something that works better. Tales from the Clone Wars or Tales of the Prequel Era, Tales of the something. And it's a series that is enjoyable, but it also feels superfluous to me.
Yes.
The Dooku stuff was cool. We got some background on Dooku and some other material, though. So curious how exactly it lines up. I haven't taken the time to look at it. But they're like, okay, Ahsoka as a baby. Okay, cool, fine. It means that Plo Koon doesn't find her until she's at least a year old. Okay, fine. You know, he finds her. We've seen that quick flashback before, like in a newsreel. That's fine. But then it's like, okay, let's show how she learns the moves that saved her from Order 66 kind of stuff. And let's, for some reason, have Obi-Wan sometime in the period when we know he's got one hairstyle, suddenly have a mullet again. Because remember episode 2? Yeah, we remember episode 2. Do you remember that episode 2 was far enough before the Clone Wars episodes where Ahsoka was introduced and the Clone Wars film where Ahsoka was introduced that he didn't have that hairstyle anymore? Do you remember? And then, you know, hey, how awesome would it be to have Caleb Doom and Depa Balaba in there together watching her? That's awesome. Except I don't think they've met yet at that point, because we've got their backstory in, you know, the canon comics. Or just like Siege of Mandalore, kind of rewriting what we saw in flashbacks in the Ahsoka novel. Now we have a chunk of the Ahsoka novel kind of streamlined, narrowed down, and changed significantly to give us what we see in the final episode. And it's one of those things that was one of the things that just, you know, that irked me. Not so much that they would do that kind of change, although that kind of change is frustrating, certainly. But doing the timeline for so long, that kind of stuff happens all the time. There's something that comes in, it contradicts something else. They come up with some solution or say which one takes precedent, and you just kind of keep moving on. You can't necessarily expect that one creative team will have to have intimate knowledge of the work of some other creative team in order to make their project work, especially depending on who it is. Fine. But this is that prime example of one of the things that I was driving me nuts when I was doing Beyond the Films with Mark or with the timeline. Is it's advertised, you know, after the reboot, which was after the Disney purchase of Lucasfilm, that was what, 10 years ago this week, was the cool thing about this new continuity is it's all going to be canon. It's all going to be equal. Everything is going to matter now, which is awesome and supposed to create sort of a level playing field. So we're going to copy and paste the old G canon and T canon into a new document, so to speak, and let it sprawl into a new universe where everything is equal. And we'll deal with contradictions on a case-by-case basis. The problem is, when contradictions come up, if you're a case-by-case basis, always, always, always makes the same decision, deferring to the films and television over the books or comics, then whether you call it that or not, you have created a tiered system again. It is not all equal. All stories are equal, but some are more equal than others, as Orwell might put it. It's just not what the party line is supposed to be. And if you want to acknowledge that, fine, acknowledge it. Great. But it's just another one of those things that just, it bothers me. Not necessarily that they could do a show that trumps a book. It bothers me that they could do a show that trumps a book and then still claim, don't worry, it's all equal, even though every time there's a contradiction between something live action and something in print, you can bet print's the one that's going to get the shaft. Because that strikes me as disingenuous to claim that there's an equality there when it really is essentially tiered. It's just that most of the time the tiering doesn't matter because there isn't a contradiction. But when it does matter, when it does happen, it's the same decision every time. So Just be honest about it. Just be clear about it. But I don't know. Rant over. There you go. Rant command has ended.
Oh, you know, like we've lived with a tiered system obviously before, and I think, you know, you've nailed it on the head. Why be disingenuous? Just come out and say it straight that there's a canon, but it works this way. And yes, you know, just like before, the movies and anything like the Clone Wars, etc., is the first of those tiers, you know, and then we work our way down. There's nothing wrong with that. Star Trek's been doing for years. You know, none of the books are canon. Does that make your enjoyment of those books any different? No, of course not. Some of the best expanded universe books are the Khan series, you know, about how, of course, you know, that character came to all the way through to Wrath of Khan, you know, and it was interesting to see people's, ideas on how that came through. And the books are fantastic, the eugenics wars, all that sort of stuff. It just shows you, you know, yes, you're playing in a sandbox, but let people have the room to grow and really, you know, a story is an evolving thing, particularly even as we read it. But you know, imagine the writer doing their own work on that too, letting that really grow and expand. And how many great writers we've had in Star Wars, and they're all great, fantastic writers. And I think, you know, it must be hard to write in those universes when you've got set of guidelines that George himself put in place as to what this universe is, what that sand pit is, but also now then be stuck with a story group that say, right, it has to be this and this in that timeline. You've got this in news. By the way, these creators are doing this, this director's doing that, and blah, blah, blah. How do you do that? That must be bloody hard. And my hat's off to them, how they get through and still make some great stories is hard work.
Yeah, I mean, and I, having had a chance to write for Tales, we didn't really run into a whole lot of that on that story because it was kind of a toss-away story. But I worked about a decade ago now, I guess, on the Wars franchise, which was when the Star Wars CCG license left Decipher Inc., the card game company. They made a series called Wars, which would basically use the same mechanics with these different human and alien factions. And about 10 years ago, there was sort of a revitalization of that. I kind of got a chance to be almost the Timothy Zahn of that, or I guess now the Chuck Wendig, but boy, do I prefer being thought of as a Timothy Zahn of it, not the Chuck Wendig, but I can write coherent sentences. But we did, or at least not sentence fragments. But, you know, we had to work within the guidelines of, we're going to basically tell the story of this backstory. We have all these different things that need to be done. And in that case, what we were doing was, it was three different lines of three different novellas all leading to this same point. So you had other writers writing stuff happening concurrently. And I was lucky because mine was the first and then the second of three novellas for each. I didn't have to write the last one where it was all really clashing together. But even then, there's a lot of stuff you have to keep in mind. There's a lot of seeping yourself in the lore. And when you're a professional writer and you're constantly writing all the time, you don't have the time, the luxury to necessarily do that. You expect someone to catch stuff and note things as you go. So yeah, I've always been impressed with how coherent Star Wars, whether it's Legends or canon, is, generally speaking, that there are few enough contradictions that when they do happen, we talk about them, right? If they were happening all the time, that wouldn't be a thing. I almost made a political analogy, but I'm not going to go there with things that, you know, you get used to. But it's just one of those things where, you know, with Tales of the Jedi, they're telling these fun stories. I can tell that, you know, you can imagine like the writer's room and the excitement of, let's tell a story like this. And we've got this previous, you know, hints of this story here. But, you know, then I would hate to be in E.K. Johnson's shoes right now, because she's getting flack from all sides, right? She's getting flack from those who are almost like taking up her cause most strenuously, that casts her in a bad light because of their behavior online. This is why Disney sucks. This is why Filoni shouldn't be in charge of, because of the contradiction. And then there's the, yeah, I like the episode, screw the books, the books should never matter, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's like coming at it from either side. And it's just, that's not her doing. She wrote the story based on what she was given at the time. It was their decision to go back then and actually make season 7 of Clone Wars or make Tales of the Jedi and have it override what she had written. There's definitely, like, there's room for, I think, I guess the point I'm getting at is there's room definitely for conversation about the continuity side of things. And I think that is an important discussion to be had. If you're going to be being told everything is equal, but it's obviously not, that is an important discussion to be had if you're talking about, you know, franchises and stuff like that. Grand scheme of things doesn't really mean anything, but in a fandom grand scheme of things, it does. But those should never be allowed to spill over into, I guess you could say, the lives and livelihoods of the authors themselves. You know, kind of the same thing. Like, you could hate Rose as a character in Last Jedi or in what little she's in Rise of Skywalker. Mm-hmm. But that shouldn't be taken out on Kelly Marie Tran, Jar Jar Binks, and Ahmed Best. There's a distinction. And unfortunately, we're, especially in a social media society right now, so heavily seeped in that, it's almost like that line, we forget that it's there. I don't even say it blurs, because even a blurred line, you can see. And I think for a lot of people, it's like a light switch instead. You know, at some point they decided that I care about these characters, and therefore anything related to them or their stories seeps over onto the actors who performed what someone else wrote, or this writer who wrote something based on guidelines they could never have known were going to be tossed out the window years later. So my take would be Tales of the Jedi, great stuff. Wish it hadn't contradicted, but it does open up room for that conversation a bit more. And maybe at some point we'll get to a more intellectually honest place with the discussion. I think that,
100%.
Yeah, it's tiered, but the fact that it's tiered doesn't really make much of a difference. Just a matter of acknowledging it, really.
You absolutely nailed it. And you know, it's exactly what I thought of the series too. You know, it's interesting. If anything, I just want longer episodes, really. I mean, 15 minutes is a little bit too much. But you know what? I've got a fun one for us to go out on. It is Halloween, folks. That's right, Halloween. Yes, we even do Halloween out here in Australia. We do some pretty funny ones, actually, I've got to say. But I want to ask you, what are you doing for Halloween? Are you dressing up? Is there a Star Wars theme that you are going to do?
So we're not doing Star Wars Halloween right now. So my son is 4 at this point. Little Kate is 4. We live in an area where there's not a lot of like house-to-house trick-or-treating stuff that goes on. So we'd have to go somewhere, probably another neighborhood or something, to do it. With the pandemic and everything still winding down, I'm moderate risk. My wife is high risk. She actually had it and got through Omicron. Our son has not been vaccinated. He's old enough for the mRNA vaccines, but she almost died from an mRNA vaccine when she got her second dose of the Moderna vaccine. She nearly died. Mm-hmm. Because she's got other underlying health things. So we don't want to get him vaccinated yet until there is a non-mRNA version. So we think that this is probably the last Halloween that he's going to sit out, and we're just going to kind of hang at home. So I'm going to be doing that. I will probably, knowing him, he's going to be out like a light pretty early anyway, just from a busy day otherwise. So my Halloween plan is, I've gotten big into board games, and I am going to probably be playing some Final Girl, which is one of the, it was the single most funded solo only board game on Kickstarter. And it's this modular system. You get to basically play through a horror movie as the final girl, the one who survives at the end and can defeat the only one who has a chance of defeating the killer. So I got a feeling I'll probably be doing some haunted house type stuff, some Creech Manor stuff with that. I think we're about a year away from really kind of going more full on with the Halloween stuff down here. But we'll see. We never even get trick or treats. We're up on a hill. Trick or treats, like, that candy is not worth that walk.
I have a bucket of Halloween candy.
I wind up being the one that eats all of it every single year. Nobody wants to walk up our driveway to get up here and ask. Not worth it for the candy. I'd give you like half the bucket, because there's only gonna be like one or two people even showing up at the door, but no, not walking up that driveway.
That's awesome. Well, unfortunately, I've got to work on Halloween, which is a random one.
Me too.
Yeah, but they said, are you going to come to work dressed up? I went, well, I'm not really. It's a retail job, and I'm the manager of the actual establishment. So I said, well, I guess I'm working behind the counter. I'm working in the manager's area. So, you know, why the hell not? So nice. I've looked at what's the easiest way I can do it. I know I've got a mullet, I've got a V for Vendetta mask, and I've got a Jedi cloak. So I'm like, V for mullet. There you go. There you go. I
thought you're gonna feel like you're gonna speak with like the alliteration and everything now.
Oh yeah, like, hey, I'll get. How many words can you do with V and still have string a sentence together? It's gonna be hard.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, I'll be working, but I teach fully online now. So unless I have a live session with a student, they wouldn't know if I was in a costume anyway.
Oh wow.
But it could be a little weird if I like wore a costume and I just told them I was wearing one when we did like a phone call or something. They'd be like, "What's wrong with you, Mr. B? What's wrong with you?"
That is awesome. Awesome. Well, folks, I hope you've enjoyed our chat today. As always, Nathan's always lightens us to Star Wars. And what you can enjoy out of, obviously, story and timelines. You know, there is something to be said for continuity and canon. And, you know, the fact that histories in these universes are just as lived as ours here in reality. I want to thank Nathan for being on the show tonight. And let us know where we can catch you online, mate, for chat, sure. Any Star Wars.
So my YouTube channel is youtube.com/chronoradio, my old original podcast name, chronoradio. That's where I have From the Star Wars Home Video Library, my main series at this point. I do have a Patreon, but it will be closing up in the middle of next year. It's patreon.com/NathanPButler. Biggest project I'm doing there is I just finished recording audio commentaries to listen to while watching every single episode of The Clone Wars. And then for Forces of Destiny, I'm about to record some as the last ones that I record for the first season of Visions. And then, of course, the big thing for me these days is the home video stuff, just like with the YouTube channel. So my book, A Saga on Home Video, the second edition, which is a 3-volume set, is all up on Amazon and available pretty much at any Amazon catering region at this point. It's primarily focused on Star Wars home video releases from the U.S., but tons of sidebars from other regions. Kind of to give a little bit more context, only a little bit from Australia, but a fair amount from just kind of the broader world to give some context to what makes the ones in the U.S. either really interesting or sometimes kind of substandard compared to the rest of the world. So, yeah, that's where to find the stuff. Amazon, Patreon. There you go. My brain just went burp, and YouTube at this point. And of course, links awesome. To all those are at NathanPButler.com, but there's almost nothing else at NathanPButler.com. It's just, it's a website that just kind of sits there to point people. My timeline is up there, though, if anybody wants to see that. But it is several years out of date. It'd be StarWarsFanWars.com/timeline, but that just sends you to the same place NathanPButler.com does.
Awesome. I want to thank you so much for being on the show. And you're welcome back anytime to, you know, as we say in Australia, chinwag Star Wars.
Awesome. Sounds good. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast. We cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU Podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. The Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.